A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with us on the program today. Now, I know that I said on Wednesday's show, we'll be talking with Dr. AWR Hawkins from Breitbart. Unfortunately, a little bit of a scheduling conflict. So we're going to have AWR on Cam and Company one day next week, tentatively next Tuesday, but stay tuned for that. So today we're going to be, I wish that we could have Gabby Giffords on in person because I have a lot of questions for Gabby Giffords, but we're going to be going over this column that Gabby Giffords has at Newsweek all about why voters should be supporting Kamala Harris. The headline, "Trump did nothing on gun violence. Don't let him do it again." This is Giffords. I won't say it's their last push to influence the election. I mean, they're spending millions of dollars promoting Kamala Harris and other anti-gun candidates all across the country. And that's going to continue right up through Election Day. In fact, we had a story at Bearing Arms yesterday about a new ad that Giffords has dropped in, I believe it's Michigan and Nevada, called Responsibility, in which one of their, Giffords Gun Owners for Safety, a Democrat who ran for the Texas State Senate 6 years ago, lost his race, by the way, by 15 points, called for national licensing of gun owners, wanted to ban so-called assault weapons, although he did say he didn't support confiscation. He said, I just didn't make a lot of sense. But all kinds of restrictive laws, none of which he talked about in that campaign ad. The most that he talked about was closing loopholes. That was as specific as he got, right? And this is part of a trend. In Gabby Giffords' column for Newsweek, you don't see any mention of a ban on so-called assault weapons. You don't see any mention of red flag laws. You don't see any mention about raising the age to exercise your Second Amendment rights from 18 to 21. You don't see anything about gun licensing. You don't see anything about the repeal of permitless carry. You don't see anything that Giffords actually advocates for. It is amazing. So I want to go through this and fact check some of what Gabby Giffords has written and provide some additional context for some of the stuff that she's left out, right? So she starts her piece by talking about how this is the most important election in our lifetime, which, arguably is true for every election cycle, right? But she says what makes this November different is that it is clearer than ever that our basic fundamental freedoms as Americans are on the line. Again, don't necessarily disagree. But, she says, our freedom to choose what we do with our bodies, our freedom to have an economy that works for the middle class, not just the wealthy and well-connected, and our freedom to live our lives without gun violence. Without. Now, I want to know, when has the United States ever had that moment where we were free of gun violence? And what would it take to be free of gun violence? Because that doesn't suggest a decline in violent crime, right? That suggests no violent crime, at least no violent crime where a gun is involved. I mean, that's a pretty tall order. So what would it take? Gabby Giffords doesn't say. She does say that gun violence is not some faraway problem that you hear about but won't experience yourself. It's infiltrated every corner of this country, she writes, spreading like a virus. Guns are the number one killer of American kids, she says. 77% of parents report being worried about guns in school. They are the reason we lose so many lives to suicide every year. Nearly everyone in this country, she says, will know a victim of gun violence in their lifetime. So now we're starting to play fast and loose with the facts, right? The only way that the gun control advocates get to that number of gun deaths being the number one cause of death for kids is by excluding children under the age of one, by adding adults 18 to 19 to that list, right? Because according to the CDC, the number one cause of death for kids is accidents, accidental injuries. Now, that may include firearms. That may also include car accidents. They may include falling off a ladder or tripping and falling. But that is the number one category of deaths for kids. Now, we can also reduce those numbers without restricting anybody's fundamental civil liberties. not just our right to keep and bear arms, but again, our freedom. We don't have a constitutionally protected right to drive, but I think it's assumed that we have a right, or at least the freedom, to travel from place to place behind the wheel of a car, right? We can reduce drug overdose deaths. And frankly, we've already criminalized all of the drugs that are the leading cause of death for, what, 100,000 plus Americans every year. Far higher, by the way, than the number of gun-related deaths, including suicides, accidents, and homicides. We can bring those numbers down without restricting anybody's fundamental civil liberties. But that's not Gifford's agenda. That's not what they're trying to do. They're trying to use those deaths, again, to go after our right to keep and bear arms. Gifford's writes, yes, we've made a lot of progress in recent years. The Biden-Harris administration has done more for gun safety than any administration in history, helping pass the first major gun reform in 30 years, establishing a whole-of-government approach to the crisis, and ensuring that nearly all gun sellers are required to run background checks on purchasers. Now gun crime is falling in cities across the country. As a reminder, she writes, it skyrocketed during the Trump administration. All right, so let's talk about that for a second. The Biden administration has done more for gun safety than any other administration in history. Now, even if you want to conflate gun safety with gun control, which are two very different things, as Giffords does here, I would argue that maybe the Johnson administration passing the Gun Control Act of 1968 probably did more for gun control groups than what the Biden administration does or has done. Now, what the Biden-Harris administration has done, as Gabby Gifford says, is they've adopted this sort of whole-of-government approach, right? So when Congress won't pass the gun control laws that groups like Giffords, Everytown, and Brady want, the Biden-Harris administration has been more than happy to bend over backwards and to use the executive branch to try to create new gun control laws under the guise of executive actions, right? We've seen this with the ATF rules on unfinished frames and receivers, on pistol stabilizing braces, on binary triggers, and yes, on who is engaged in the business of selling a firearm. When Gabby Giffords writes that the Biden-Harris administration has ensured that nearly all gun sellers are required to run background checks on purchases, what she leaves out is the fact that under federal law, yes, even under the Bipartisan Safer Communities Act, which was passed a couple of years ago, in order to be seen as a gun dealer, you are supposed to repetitively engage in sales. But according to the ATF's new rule about who is engaged in the business of selling firearms, you don't even have to complete a single sale for the ATF to consider you an unlicensed gun seller. Simply offering a firearm for sale for any amount of profit, even as little as a penny, could turn you into an unlicensed gun dealer. And if you don't put that potential buyer, that hypothetical buyer, through a background check, well, you could be facing federal charges, prison time. Now, how the ATF would prove that somebody who hasn't even completed a sale is in fact an unlicensed gun dealer is beyond me. But that is the language that the ATF is using. That is the language that the Department of Justice is defending in court. This isn't about going after straw buyers. This isn't about going after firearms traffickers. We can do that again without putting any new laws on the books. This is about trying to impose universal background checks, not through a vote by Congress, but again, through executive fiat. Giffords goes on to say, we're once again at a turning point. We can move forward and save lives with Vice President Kamala Harris and Tim Walz. Actually, hang on. Before I get to that, though, I want to go back because there's something else that I needed to rebut. She talked about the rising crime rates under Donald Trump. For most of Trump's first term in office, violent crime rates actually fell. It wasn't until the pandemic in 2020 that we did see this spike in violent crime and homicides across the country. Now, was Trump to blame for this? No. What we saw in communities from coast to coast was a decision by a lot of big city police chiefs to not arrest individuals for low-level offenses. The courts were closed, and many defendants were released from custody, right? We didn't want large populations in jail because we were worried that the pandemic would spread behind bars. So there was a conscious effort to deplete the number of individuals who were incarcerated or who were being held in custody until their trial. Then, in the middle of 2020, you had the death of George Floyd. You had the riots that ensued afterwards. You had the rise of the defund the police movement, right? Law enforcement budgets were cut. Uniformed officers in many big cities said, forget this, man. I'm going to go work in the suburbs. I'm going out to the county. I'm not staying here. There were all kinds of policies that were put in place, like the Safety Act in Illinois, the Raise the Age Law in New York, Raise the Age Law in Baltimore, in Maryland, that went easy on violent criminals. And we've seen this explosion in serious juvenile crimes. We've talked about it here on Bearing Arms time and time again. That's not the result of the Trump administration. That's the result of Democratic policies in blue states. Now, Gifford says that crime is decreasing now, which is an open question, right? We just saw the FBI very quietly revise its crime stats for 2022. And what was originally reported as a slight decrease in violent crime actually turned out to be an increase of about 4.5% in violent crime. So I don't know that we can actually give, I don't think it's fair to give a president credit or blame for a rise or fall in crime rates. Because crime is generally a local phenomenon. And you can see, even in one state, dramatic decreases in homicides in one city and dramatic increases in homicides in another. We saw that last year in Missouri, where homicides declined in St. Louis, increased in Kansas City. This year, homicides are decreasing, I believe, in both St. Louis and Kansas City. I know they're down by about 20% in Kansas City. What changed over that past year? Nothing at the federal level. New York State, another perfect example. I wrote about this earlier today, as a matter of fact. Homicides in New York City this year, according to the NYPD, down about 12%. In Syracuse, New York, they're up by about 12%. So can we credit New York's laws for the drop in crime in New York City without blaming New York's laws for the rise in violent crime in Syracuse? Again, you can play all kinds of games with these statistics. But the bottom line is that no, violent crime has not apparently dropped nearly as much as the Biden-Harris administration claims. And it may not have dropped at all during the Biden-Harris administration. We know that it didn't drop in 2021, didn't drop in 2022. Now the FBI, again, has told us that, right? That instead of that decline that they originally reported, it increased in 2022. We'll see what happens when they go back and they revise the numbers for 2023. But I wouldn't be surprised if that reported decrease in violent crime actually turned out to be another increase. All right, Giffords says, now we are once again at a turning point. We can move forward and save lives with Vice President Kamala Harris and Governor Tim Walz leading the charge, or we can dive backward into another Trump presidency, which will derail all of the progress that we've made. And we know exactly what another Trump presidency would look like, she writes. You just have to listen to him. Trump has said that he was proud to do nothing on guns while in office and has promised to undo every gun safety measure the Biden-Harris administration has put in place. Well, again, we're not talking about gun safety. We're talking about gun control. The Democrats consciously made this decision about a decade ago, maybe even a little bit longer than that, that the phrase gun control, while accurate, turned off voters. So they didn't want to use that phrase. That's when they rebranded themselves as a gun safety movement. But the policies that they're still calling for aren't about helping people be safe and responsible gun owners. They're about making it harder to be a safe and responsible gun owner. They're making it about being more difficult to exercise this fundamental civil right. And yeah, I think she's right that if Trump is elected, a lot of the progress on gun control the gun control lobby has been able to see over the past couple of years probably will be undone. You know, the ATF rules that have been put in place, creating new laws out of existing regulations, they're being challenged in court. We'll see what happens with the Vanderstock case. That's the frame and receiver challenge. Supreme Court hearing oral arguments this fall. You've still got pending legislation, pending litigation against the binary trigger rule, against the engaged in the business rule. And I hope that the Supreme Court will put a stop to this executive branch overreach, as they did in striking down the administrative ban on bump stocks that was imposed by the Trump administration, which, by the way, when Trump says he did nothing on guns, well, he did do that, right? But he was also far more protective of the right to keep and bear arms than Kamala Harris or Tim Walz will ever be. Giffords writes, Harris is committed to taking reasonable, common sense steps to reduce gun violence across our communities. She's already tackled this issue in every public office she's held, from the San Francisco District Attorney's Office to the U.S. Senate, and now as vice president. As a gun owner herself, she stands with the majority who support closing loopholes that allow dangerous people to access guns. And she knows that doing so doesn't interfere with our rights. The growing Giffords Gun Owners for Harris Walz Coalition illustrates exactly who's responsible for gun owners, exactly who responsible gun owners will be voting for this November. Now, all right, so there's a lot to unpack there. I mean, a lot to unpack there. So Gabby Giffords says Kamala Harris is committed to taking reasonable, common sense steps, right? Tackling this issue at every public office she's ever held, from the San Francisco DA's office, where she supported San Francisco's ban on handguns that would have required existing owners to turn them over to the San Francisco police. Is that a reasonable, common sense step to reduce gun violence? In 2007, 2 years after Kamala Harris supported Prop H in San Francisco, she told the Supreme Court to uphold Washington, D.C.'s gun ban. Said that the Supreme Court should not recognize an individual right to keep and bear arms and should keep the district's handgun ban in place. Is that reasonable? Is that common sense? In 2022, Kamala Harris, as the vice president, said that the Supreme Court's decision in Bruin defied common sense and the Constitution. This was the case in which the Supreme Court said, yeah, the right to keep and bear arms not only protects the right to keep, but the right to bear arms. And New York's issue concealed carry licensing laws requiring people to show a justifiable need or good cause to exercise their right to carry violated the Second Amendment. Now, I don't know about you. I consider that Supreme Court decision to be very reasonable and common sense. A Marquette Law School poll has routinely asked Americans what they think about the Bruin decision and other decisions over the past couple of years. Their last survey found 70% approval for the Bruin decision among the American people. The same decision that Kamala Harris said defies common sense in the Constitution. So, no, Kamala Harris has not spent her entire career taking reasonable, common sense steps to reduce gun violence. She has spent her entire career blaming lawful gun owners for violent crime and proclaiming that the only answer to reduce violent crime is by going after and diminishing our right to keep and bear arms. Now, Giffords writes, as a gun owner herself, Kamala Harris stands with the majority who support closing loopholes that allow dangerous people to access guns. And she knows that doing so doesn't interfere with our rights. That, by the way, is the only policy proposal that Gabby Giffords mentions in this piece at Newsweek. The only one. And even there, there's a problem. Now, she's right. Most Americans don't want dangerous people to get a hold of guns. The question is, how do you define dangerous? Yeah, as Tim Walz said on the campaign trail this week, pointed out, Donald Trump can't pass a background check. He's been convicted of 34 felonies. Donald Trump too dangerous to own a gun? I mean, sure, to the left, right? I mean, he's Hitler. So, of course, he's too dangerous to own a gun. What about somebody like Brian Range, who 29 years ago pled guilty to a misdemeanor for falsifying his income on a food stamp application? But because at the time, that crime in Pennsylvania, that misdemeanor crime, was punishable by more than a year in prison, Brian Range lost his Second Amendment rights, even though he was only sentenced to probation. Is Brian Range dangerous? What about people who've been convicted of other nonviolent felony offenses and frankly, victimless crimes? Are they dangerous? According to the DOJ, yes, they are. Anybody convicted of what they say a serious crime, and they say Congress, it's up to Congress to define what a serious crime is, but anybody convicted of a serious crime should not be allowed to possess a firearm forevermore. That, by the way, could have included Tim Walz. Same year that Brian Range was arrested, charged with falsifying his income on a food stamp application, Tim Walz was arrested. He was charged with DUI in Nebraska. I think he was doing like 90-something in a 55. Blood alcohol content, 0.128. In Nebraska now, felony DUI starts at 0.15. So Tim Walz was a drink or two away from potentially being charged with a felony. Now, he took a plea deal, pled guilty to reckless driving. But could an argument be made that Tim Walz was too dangerous to own a gun 29 years ago? I think so. I mean, his crime had far more potential to harm others than Brian Range. But Tim Walz can own a gun because he took a plea deal. Brian Range can't, even though he was sentenced to probation for a misdemeanor, just like Tim Walz. The system is screwy, but it's what the gun control advocates want. And again, their goal is to label as many Americans as possible dangerous and unable to exercise their Second Amendment rights. So when she says that this is, you know, all about not allowing dangerous people to access guns, and that doesn't interfere with our rights? Yeah, it does. Because when somebody who is not a danger to themselves or others can no longer exercise their Second Amendment rights, guess what? Their rights have been interfered with. But again, as I say, that's the only policy that Gabby Giffords writes about in her Newsweek piece. She doesn't mention a ban on so-called assault weapons. She doesn't mention a ban on so-called large-capacity magazines, doesn't mention gun rationing laws, doesn't mention red flag laws, doesn't mention raising the age to purchase, doesn't mention waiting periods, doesn't mention any of the things, or a repeal of permitless carry, or a return to May issue, right? None of the things that Giffords is advocating for actually made it into Gabby Giffords' column, which I find fascinating. You know what else didn't make it into her column? Anything like what she told Time Magazine last April. Here was the headline back then. No more guns. Gone. Why Gabby Giffords isn't giving up. Gabby Giffords' column in Newsweek today about why Americans should vote for Kamala Harris. Again, goes to great lengths to present the Giffords agenda as reasonable. It's common sense. No, we're not going after anybody's Second Amendment rights. We're not going after anybody's guns. Here's what Gabby Giffords told the Time reporter last April. I'm quoting here from Time. As we wrap our interview in her office, I ask how she keeps coming back to a challenge so deeply ingrained in politics. She pauses for 12 pregnant seconds. No more guns, she says. Peter Ambler, her aide and advisor, tries to clarify that she means no more gun violence. But Giffords is clear about what she's saying. No, 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 she says. Lord, no. She pauses another 32 seconds. Plenty of time to think about what she wants to say. Guns, guns, guns. No more guns. Gone. An aide clarifies. Once again, I have to clarify here. She's talking about Australia, where gun sales were outlawed after a mass shooting and existing weapons were purchased by the government. Giffords nods in the affirmative. It's an idealistic goal for sure, and one perhaps mismatch for the moment in this country, but Giffords has an answer for that. Legislation, legislation, legislation. Reasonable. Common sense. Gun safety. No more guns. Gone. Australia-style gun bans, and confiscation. That's what Gabby Giffords said she wanted last April. So if Gabby Giffords is embracing Kamala Harris, says she'll do the work that Giffords and the gun control groups want her to do, I'm sorry, the gun safety groups want her to do, what does that mean? To me, it sounds like Gabby Giffords and the other gun control activists think that a Kamala Harris presidency would advance that goal of no more guns. Gone. So why isn't Gabby Giffords willing to say that less than 2 weeks before Election Day? I think we know the answer, right? Because most Americans don't see that as reasonable or common sense. They certainly don't see that as protecting our freedoms. They would view that as a violation of our fundamental right to keep and bear arms and a reason to vote against Kamala Harris. So even though Gabby Giffords has said loud and proud that her goal is no more guns, as we head into the home stretch of the 2024 election, she's not willing to say that these days. It's a completely different story. And one that, frankly, is unbelievable and not in a good way. All right, so let's turn our attention now to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We can talk about, again, ways to reduce violence, including gun-related violence, without imposing on anybody's right to keep and bear arms. Here's a story out of Nebraska. Grand Island man gets probation in stolen firearms case. Now, we know that criminals obtain their firearms primarily through things like theft and the black market. We're told that these are serious crimes. But why do we also see time and time again individuals who are charged with these supposedly serious offenses walk away with a slap on the wrist? KSNB in Nebraska reports that court records show 20-year-old Angel Gatto sentenced to 5 years on probation yesterday for convictions on possession of a stolen firearm, attempted burglary, and drug possession. Police arrested Gatto last year after a victim reported that somebody broke into his home in Grand Island, Nebraska, sold 21 guns, along with a high school championship wrestling ring. Hall County deputies later found a group of people who were shooting guns inside the city limits. They stopped to talk to him. Gatto, as well as a 20-year-old Tethloach Toot, among the individuals in that group. Court records indicate that the guns that were located were determined to be the ones that had been stolen from that earlier burglary. The next day, officers served a search warrant on Gatto and Toot's home. Apparently, they lived together. That's where they found the stolen high school ring. They found ammunition. Grand Island police say that the three people, including Toot and Gatto, also went into Sportsman's Warehouse where they shoplifted ammunition and were later arrested. Police were able to trace a gun that was in Gatto's possession to one that had been stolen out of Iowa. So now they have connected Gatto to at least two incidents of gun theft, one in Grand Island, Nebraska, the other in Iowa. And he got 5 years of probation for this. His co-defendant, Toot, faces 41 felony charges, including burglary, possession of a stolen firearm, possession of a deadly weapon by a prohibited person, felony theft, and shoplifting. He's also charged in a separate case with robbery and driving under suspension. He's next due in court November 5th. I don't think he's gone to trial yet. May very well take a plea deal. God knows what his sentence is going to be. But if you've noticed the gun control groups, I can't recall any gun control advocate ever looking at one of these stories and saying, this is wrong. This is a problem. This isn't the type of story that they highlight. Right? They don't really talk about this much. Instead, again, they're focused on responsible gun owners, law-abiding gun owners. We got to crack down on them. We got to ban the hardware. We got to ban the magazines. We got to stop people from going into a gun store and buying two guns in a 30-day period. That's what they're focused on. But guys like Gatto, they don't care. even when he gets away with a slap on the wrist for stealing guns from a responsible gun owner who reported that theft. All right. Today's armed citizen story from the mean streets of Chicago, where a concealed carry holder defended himself against a group of individuals who tried to carjack him early this morning. It was about 5:30 in the Auburn Gresham neighborhood. 47-year-old man in his car, probably getting ready to go to work. According to Chicago police, four individuals walk up to the car, demand his keys, attack him with a chemical agent, probably pepper spray, maybe bear spray, I don't know. Sprayed him in the face. That is when the guy behind the wheel of the Toyota Camry, who is a lawful gun owner, does possess a valid concealed carry license in the state of Illinois, drew his firearm and shot one of these suspects. Now, the other three suspects managed to get away in the guy's car. So they drove off in the Toyota Camry. They left behind their buddy, a 16-year-old, who had been shot twice. He was taken to a local hospital. Non-life-threatening injuries. He's expected to survive. The victim, thankfully, uninjured beyond getting sprayed in the face. Not expected to face any charges. And again, I would ask Gabby Giffords, is it reasonable, is it common sense that people in Chicago should be able to carry a firearm to defend themselves against these carjackers? Carjackers, by the way, have almost, they're down, they're reportedly down a little bit this year. But between 2018 and 2022, I believe it was, carjackings doubled in Chicago. And a lot of these offenses are being committed by juveniles because they know what happens if they get caught. They're quickly put back out on the street. They're told to go back home to their parent or guardian. Maybe they get an ankle monitor put on them, but if they cut the ankle monitor off, nothing really happens. And by the way, Chicago police, as of April of this year, have only made arrests in about 3.3%, not 33%, 3.3% of car thefts and carjackings. So there is an understanding that if you commit these crimes, you're probably going to be able to get away with it. And if you don't have to worry about the consequences, well, this is going to seem way more appealing, isn't it? The criminal justice system in Chicago, and frankly, Illinois, is broken. But thankfully, they have not been able to eradicate our right to keep arms, and people still do have the ability to protect and defend themselves, even in Chicago. And by the way, that wasn't the case, a little bit more than 10 years ago. Illinois, the last state in the union to ban the carrying of firearms, which seems pretty unreasonable, right? Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals actually said, yeah, this is unreasonable. In fact, it's unconstitutional. And rather than appeal that decision up to the Supreme Court, the gun control lobby convinced Illinois officials to take the loss because they did not want to see the Supreme Court do as they did in Bruin in 2022 and say, yes, the right to bear arms is just as real and significant as the right to keep them in your home. They fought tooth and nail against concealed carry. And the only reason why Illinois has a concealed carry law is because the gun control lobby, well, it's not the only reason, because it would have happened eventually. But the reason why Illinois adopted a shall-issue concealed carry law is because the gun control lobby didn't want a case dealing with the right to keep and bear arms to get up to the Supreme Court. Because if they did, oh my God, that's going to allow more Americans to exercise their Second Amendment rights. We don't want that. And again, they thought a ban on carrying firearms was reasonable and common sense, even though it clearly would have put this victim at risk. All right, finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. A neighbor in Los Angeles who helped save a young girl from being kidnapped. This was in the Wilmington neighborhood of Los Angeles. Happened, I guess it was earlier this week, Monday afternoon, about 3:15. There's a guy who was walking behind an 11-year-old girl as she was walking home from school. He approached her from behind and then started to grope her. As she tried to break free, a neighbor saw what was going on and yelled out, "Hey, leave her alone." And that was enough to stop the assault. And again, a potential kidnapping. Guy let the girl go, turned around, ran to a nearby car, and drove off. The police haven't made any arrests in this case. They don't know who this guy is. I don't know. There was video footage at the time, but I don't know that they were able to get a license plate. We don't know for sure that this guy planned on kidnapping this 11-year-old girl, but he certainly planned on assaulting her, because he did. And, you know, the story we had yesterday about all those cars driving by that highway in Wyoming, not seeing this injured motorcyclist who's waving a cowboy boot around because that's the only thing that he could do. And he wondered if people would ever stop or if he was going to die there on the side of the road. And then a couple of passerby actually saw the tip of that boot waving and said, "Okay, that's not right. We got to pull over and stop." Sometimes, again, it is the kindness of strangers in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. And I'm sure that there are plenty of people in that same neighborhood who, if they had seen what was going on, would have said, "Nah, not my problem. Maybe it's the uncle. Maybe it's an older boyfriend. I don't know. But, man, I'm not going to deal with it. I got other stuff going on in my life." Thankfully, that alert neighbor saw what was happening to that little girl and yelled out for help. Yelled out for that man to stop. And that was enough to prevent that attack from going any further. Again, might not always be the case, which is yet another reason why we need to have our right to keep and bear arms secure and intact. And California has a long way to go in that regard. But I'm grateful in this case that a firearm wasn't necessary to stop that assault on the 11-year-old girl. A loud voice was all that was needed to save her from harm. So in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing, that anonymous neighbor there in Los Angeles, we thank you for your very good deed. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. I want to thank you, as always, for being a part of the program. It has been a few days since I have made this pitch. I know you probably get tired of hearing it, but we depend on support from Second Amendment advocates like you to help us keep spreading the word about what's going on with our right to keep and bear arms and the attacks on that fundamental right. So I would encourage you, if you are not already a VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum member at Town Hall Media, now's a great time to sign up. Use the promo code SAVEAMERICA. You can get a significant savings. You're going to get all kinds of exclusive access to news stories, live chats, Town Hall TV. You're going to get a discount on the merch store. If you become a Town Hall Platinum member, you'll actually have the ability to contact Town Hall writers directly and give your feedback. So again, use the promo code SAVEAMERICA. Significant savings, but you will also be helping us to save and preserve our right to keep and bear arms. We thank you for that very much. We'll see you back here on Monday. Until then, be well, be safe, and yes, be free.